So Romans chapter 16, final chapter of Romans here. And if you grabbed a bulletin on your way in, there's a teaching sheet where you can follow along with some of the main points of the message. And I want to open it up with an article that I came across this week titled Best Last Lines in Movie History. And just to give this a little bit of oomph here, I'm going to read the line, and you have to guess what the movie is from. Are we good on that? All right. I suspect that this first one you will know, but it's going to get a little harder as we go along, just to warn you. Okay, the first one here. Auntie M, there's no place like home. Wizard of Oz. Yes, Wizard of Oz. Good. All right, so now you know what we're doing here. Let's go on to the next one. Rhodes. Well, we're going. We don't need Rhodes. What is that? Yes, Back to the Future. Thank you. Okay, next one here. This is a little bit before my time, just to give you a little clue here. I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. All right, go ahead here. Casablanca, yes. Good. A little bit behind, a little bit before my time. Next one here. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you. Does anyone know? Oh, we're stumped. Not a big Matrix fan here. Anyone? Matrix, yeah. Okay, next one. The stuff that dreams are made of. Oh, I apparently made these too hard here. All right, this is from The Maltese Falcon. Black and white, so it must have been from a long time ago. This one is short and sweet, but when I give you the title, you're going to say, oh, he says, I'll be right here. Oh, all right. Thank you. Yes. Someone knew it. E.T. Yes. And I think we have one more here. No, it wasn't the airplanes. It was Beauty Killed the Beast. Came from, yes, from 1933, King Kong. Good job there. Now, why am I giving you movie quotes here on a Sunday morning? Now, I'm not a movie expert by any means, but as I was looking at some of these last lines, I suspect that none of these last lines were just put in there haphazardly. So the writers of these movies put these last lines in on purpose. It was because they wanted to close out how the movie ended. They wanted to re-emphasize a theme. They wanted to give us one last thing to think about. And so those lines are given for a purpose. And in the passage today that we're going to be looking at, and again, we're in Romans chapter 16. This is the final chapter of Romans that we started almost a year ago. And this, just like a good movie, is going to close out with re-emphasizing some of the main points here and giving us one last thing to think about. It's as if Paul finishes chapter 15, which is sort of the main part of the letter here, finishes out, and then he stops and he takes a breath, and then he begins having his scribe write out chapter 16 there. And so today we're going to be looking at the first half of chapter 16. It was going to go far too long of a sermon, so we're going to do the first half this week, and then we're going to close out the chapter in the book next week. And today we're going to focus on just one part of it, first half there, and to summarize the entire chapter, to summarize it, I put it in just a few words here, and that is, don't lose focus. Don't lose focus. Stay focused on what you are called to do. Because listen, that is the only way that you are going to make an impact in this world is if you stay focused. That's the only way that we as a church will make an impact in this world is if we stay focused. And that's the only way that people out there who don't know Jesus will be reached with the message of Jesus is if we stay focused. I finished a book just yesterday on, it's a fictional book about a woman who was studying to be a surgeon in the 19th century in England. And the story talks about all the medicine stuff and everything, but every once in a while it brushes on what happens in the evening of a person living in England in the 19th century. Do you want to know their schedule in the evening? They go into the living room and they sit down and they read a book. And that's all they did, because there wasn't TV, there wasn't internet, there weren't cars to take you easily to places. You walked most of the time. So reading was the main thing you did in the evening. But what do we have now instead today in the evening? We have an enormous amount of things that could take our time, right? All sorts of things. We could check the internet. We could easily drive to just about anywhere safely and easily in the dark. We could get to the coast. We could get to the mountains and all these things. We could watch TV. Netflix has probably millions of hours of television that we could watch and so on. And so while there are a lot of things that we could do, there are not a lot of things that are worthy of our main attention, of our main focus. And so again, if we are going to reach the world, if we are going to make a difference in this community, if we are going to see people, neighbors, friends, family, cross over from hell to heaven, then we must stay focused. And so, to start talking about this idea of staying focused, Paul begins the first half of chapter 16 with sort of a slightly different topic, but I'll show you how it ties in here. And I gave a lot of thought to what the title of this section should be called. And I put all of my educational powers into it and focused and looked at the Greek. And here's the title that I came up with. The title of this section is The Greetings. The Greetings. Let me go ahead and read verse 1. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a servant of the church in Cenchrea, that you may welcome her in the Lord in a way worthy of the saints, and to help her in whatever she may need from you. For she has been a patron of many and of myself as well. Let's stop there. The first person that Paul mentions in the greeting here is a lady named Phoebe. And there's two key words that he uses to describe her. First of all, he mentions that she is a patron. That could also mean benefactress. And so Phoebe was likely a wealthy woman who's probably influential in the workplace or culture there. And Paul says that she was a patron, a benefactress to many people in their church community. And quite a few scholars and pastors that I read thought that she was the one that carried the letter of Romans that we're reading to the churches in Rome. And so that's the first one, that she is a patron. But the second key word there is servant, servant. And the word servant can mean really two different things. First of all, it can mean that she simply served. She was a servant of the church. She served the church in some way. The second meaning that some people translate it or see it as is that she was a deaconess in the church, because servant is the word for deacon. And now let me give you, I'm just going to take a slight tangent here to give you a little overview of the main positions, the main leadership positions or titles in the New Testament churches. And so the first one that we see in New Testament is the apostles. And there's really two types of apostles that we see. There's the capital A apostles, and those are the ones who most of them were the disciples that were with Jesus and then were sent out by Jesus, because apostle literally means one sent out. And so the ones that were sent out by Jesus, starting as disciples, ending up as apostles, the ones who were with Jesus and sent out by Jesus are capital A apostles. However, over time, likely, that word also is just used in its most basic meaning as well, as one sent out. And so there were other people in the New Testament church that were sent out as apostles. not as capital A apostles, but lowercase a apostles. And they were sent out to proclaim the message of Jesus. Do we have another name for someone who is sent out into all the world to proclaim the message of Jesus? Missionary, yeah. So we don't really use the word apostle these days anymore because there's no more capital A apostles, because when they died, that capital A apostle ended. But there's plenty of people that could be called lowercase a apostles that we simply call missionaries. Now, the second word there that we see in the New Testament is the word elder. You could also see the word overseer or pastor. And all of those words are synonymous. And the word elder is for a qualified and called man who provides spiritual leadership for the church. And so it's the elder or pastor who's the primary teacher of the church, and it's the elder or pastor or elders and pastor who lead the church spiritually speaking. And then lastly, in the New Testament, we see that there are deacons, deacons. And that literally, as I said, just means servant. And so the deacon as a title is someone who helps the pastors out by serving the church and meeting the physical needs of the people. And so they didn't provide spiritual leadership over the church. They simply helped out in serving in some area in the church. And so if you're noticing the descriptions that I'm giving from what was happening in the New Testament, those are slightly different than how our church carries them out, isn't it? So we have a pastor right here. We also have deacons. In our church, they essentially work with the pastor to provide the spiritual leadership of the church. Now, over time, we're slowly in the process as a church of moving towards having what I call a biblical lining up of a New Testament church where we have the elders, pastors, and then we also have the deacons serving under us. So over time, you'll see, and as a church, as members, we'll be talking about changes that will be coming, and we've already talked about that some this past year. Now, going back to our lady here, Phoebe, what was she? What was she? Was she a servant who simply served in the church, or was she a deacon or deaconess in the church? And the answer is, we can't be certain, because it's vague enough that Paul does not specify which one it is. But let's just think about this. The way that Paul is pointing her out as in a more official capacity, he's saying, welcome her. And it makes me think that she was someone more than just someone who served the church. Also, if you look at all the other greetings, which we'll look at just a little bit later in chapter 16 here, no one else that's part of the church there is called a servant of the church. Phoebe's the only one there that is called a servant of the church. So it's entirely possible that Phoebe was a deacon or deaconess of the church, but that's from a first century definition, not from an island pond definition of deacon. So she oversaw, she met physical needs of the people in some capacity. We saw that, which makes sense then if she's also called a patron or benefactress of them. Now, continuing on to our passage, because we're really going to be focusing more on the next part, but I thought it was important that we looked a little bit at those two verses before we moved on. So starting in verse 3 here, we're going to see that Paul goes off on a barrage of greetings. Verse 3, greet Prissa and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but all the churches of the Gentiles give thanks as well. Greet also the church in their house. Greet my beloved Epaphroditus, who was the first convert to Christ in Asia. Greet Mary, who has worked hard for you. And then he goes on and on and on greeting people one after the other. And let me just give you some of those greetings here, just to give you an idea of what he's doing here. Verse 3, greet. Verse 5, greet. Verse 6, greet. Verse 7, greet. 8, greet. 9, greet. 10, greet. Greet. 11, greet, greet. 12, greet, greet. And so on and on. Oh, 16, he changes up a little bit. Greet one another with a holy kiss. All of the churches greet you. Verse 21, greet you in the Lord. Verse 23, greet you. That's a lot of greetings, isn't it? It made me think of a commercial that I saw many, many years ago. I think I saw it came out in about 2000. There's this guy, he's sitting on the couch, and he's just watching the football game, and then his friend calls up, and he's like, "What's up? How's it going?" And they just calmly talk to each other. And then, all of a sudden, a friend walks in, and the friend's like, "What's up?" And the calm guy looks back, and he's like, "What's up?" And then the guy on the phone calls back, he's like, "What's up?" And then they call up to someone that's upstairs somewhere, and he's like, "What's up?" And then down from the outside, someone's buzzing at the door, one of the friends, "What's up?" And all of them are going, "What's up?" to each other back and forth. And listen, that's a summary of chapter 16 right there at the beginning. That's it. Greet, 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 greet. Now, I'm not going to go over every single name that we're looking at here that Paul mentions, but I do want to point out the variety of different names that are mentioned. So first of all, there are 26 different people mentioned in this chapter. 26. There are different races. So there's some Jewish names. There's also some Gentile, which is another word for non-Jewish names. There's even a Latin name or two. There's different classes. We see a bunch of people mentioned, but then there's two people, I think it's in verses 10 and 11, that are mentioned as being a head of a household, and household can also mean estate. So it's possible that they were higher up there in the class system in Rome. And then there's two different genders that are mentioned here. There's 8 or 9 of them that are female that he greets. And I gave some thought as to why in the world Paul would spend so much time greeting all these different people in his amazingly deep, amazingly important letter that he was sending to the church in Rome. And so, in other words, what can we learn from a bunch of greetings? I want to give you two things to think about. Here's the first one. People were very important to Paul. People were very important. It wasn't just one group of people. It wasn't just the popular or the rich. It wasn't just the ones that had the same ethnicity as him. Paul connected with all sorts of people here. Male, female, rich, poor, Jewish, non-Jewish. We know from other passages, slaves, non-slaves, former slaves. So why is that? Why was he connecting with so many people? Now, as we're going to see in next week's message, at the last part of chapter 16, it was to stay focused. He was doing this to stay focused because Paul wanted people to know Jesus. Paul wanted people to grow in their relationship with Jesus. And to do that, he had to connect with people. And so he reached out to people that were beyond his own little area of comfort, and he reached out to people and connected with them in order that they might know and grow in Jesus. And I was thinking of Paul's upbringing that he mentions in Philippians chapter 3. Paul says, circumcised on the 8th day, that means he was a good little Jewish baby, of the people of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee. So he was an all-star Jewish guy. That's how he grew up. Now, in his town, he likely saw other people from other cultures. But as he grew up as a devout Jew, he likely was in his own little bubble interacting with mainly Jewish people. And yet, now, Once God changed his life on the road to Damascus, once he put his faith in Jesus Christ and began his mission to reach people, he stepped out of his preferences. He stepped out of his comfort zone. He stepped out of what he was used to and made himself uncomfortable enough to go and to reach people so that they may know and put their faith in Jesus. This past Friday, I went to the UPS store in Manchester. I was returning an Amazon package, and as I pulled into the parking lot there, right off of South Willow, I noticed that the parking lot was full of people, far more full than I was used to seeing in Manchester in that parking lot. And as I pull in, I notice that there's all these people that are dressed differently than the average New Hampshire person. People with scarves and long robes and long beards. That's not too different than New Hampshire, but all the other ones are. And all these things. And so finally, I walk in, and as I walk into UPS, I notice that just next door is an Islamic gathering that's coming out. And they had just gotten out. And so probably 100 people were walking out of that building and going into the parking lot. As I walked past them, I saw all these people of different cultures, certainly of different beliefs. And I thought to myself, they need Jesus. They need Jesus. But I knew that if I just stood there and began saying, come to Jesus, put your faith in Jesus, he's the only way, I didn't think that would be very effective. Wouldn't be very effective, probably. Now, on the other hand, what they don't need is someone to yell at them, is someone to tell them from afar, from a parking lot, to turn to Jesus. What they need is a Christian friend, is a Christian neighbor, is a Christian coworker who knows them, who they trust, who they've developed a relationship to share Jesus with them in that way. That's how people are going to come and know Jesus, through those connections. I want to try to illustrate this with showing you one of my kids. Here it is. One of my kids' little darts. There's a little Nerf dart here. And I'm going to have someone help me out. So is there anyone that's willing to just grab one of these as I throw it to them? All right, Isaac, come on over here. You'd be a good one. All right, Isaac, go on into the middle aisle here. Yep, just cross over. And I'm thinking probably the best way of getting it, stay there, the best way of getting a dart to him is not just to toss it to him, but to actually, is to shoot it at him. And that will get it to him quickest, won't it? And that will get it to him most direct, won't it? So let's see. All right. Come closer. You're too far away. Closer. Closer. Come on. There you go. Closer. Closer. Come. Keep coming. Okay. All right. This isn't working. It's not working. Let's try something else. How about if I just toss it to you? Okay. Go ahead and catch it. All right. That was pretty good. Good. Now, let's see what's even easier. Come closer. What if I hand it to him? How was that? Was that the easiest way so far? Okay. Let's give him a hand here. Now, here's what I'm getting at. We can only hand out the truth if the other person is close enough to receive it. We can only hand out that. We can only get them the truth if the other person is close enough to us to receive it. And I read about a survey that was in the suburb of Houston. And the goal of the survey was to find out why a person decided on the church that they ended up in. And here's some of the results here. 12% decided it was the denomination that really was the most important factor. 8% because of the beauty of the church. 3% because of the pastor. Thank you very much. 18% because of the location, that makes sense. 21% because there was a respected person or group of people in the church that they looked up to. And then the highest number, 37%, attended the church they ended up in because a friend or neighbor invited them. Not because of the pastor, not because even of the location per se, not because of the beautiful building, but because a friend or neighbor had the biggest impact on them in getting them to that church. And listen, may we as a church do the same to others. People, how do I phrase this? We do our best to get people to come to the church. We do advertising. We're on Facebook. We're on our website. We do outreaches. We put on little flyers on mailboxes. We have people, hundreds of people come at Halloween time and in the spring. But the most effective way of people coming and getting involved in church and hearing about Jesus and growing in their relationship with Jesus is if you invite them. That has far more impact than anything else we as an organization can do. So may we be people. If we want to make a difference in the community, may we focus on that. Let me show you the second thing. Why all these greetings? Paul's ministry was only possible because of the support of lesser known people. I'll show you how I get this. Verse 3, greet Prissa and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but all the churches of the Gentiles give thanks as well. So Paul says hello to two fellow workers, two fellow Christians, and he says that they risk their necks or their lives so that he might be able to do what he's doing. And because of what they did, all the non-Jewish people that Paul was trying to reach, he says, can be thankful. In other words, Paul was more effective as a missionary because of what Prissa and Aquila did. Paul was more effective because of these other two people. But here's the thing. We don't know much about Prissa and Aquila, do we? They're mentioned just a little bit in the New Testament. In Acts 18, there's Priscilla and Aquila, which most likely are the same people. 1 Corinthians 16 and then 1 Timothy 4 are all mentioned just in passing, sort of. But very little is known about them, isn't it? We don't know much about them. So think about this. Paul gets the notoriety, but all the other people here who are working hard, who are putting their necks on the line, working hard, get the less notorious, the less and less exciting part, right? Paul gets sort of gets to write the books of the Bible, gets to reach people and all that. Prissa and Aquila do that as well, but to a lower extent because they're supporting what Paul is doing here. So listen, we need both types of people. We need those who are going to lead and go into the front and be sort of in the limelight, so to speak. And then we also need the others who are going to support those as well. And so without one or the other, we won't be as effective. But the leaders will only be as effective as those supporting them. And so, again, usually the supporting roles, so to speak, are not as exciting, are they? Every once in a while, someone leaves the church, and when I meet up with them, I mean, there's lots of reasons someone will leave a church, but every once in a while I hear this say they're real involved, and then they want to go somewhere else. And I'm like, what's going on? They're like, It's got bored. And whatever position they were in, they want something new and exciting. So they move on to another church to get that newness and excitement that they can get. Most likely, after a little while, they'll go on to another one as well. I didn't tell them that, hey, I get bored too sometimes. We all get bored because church work isn't all just excitement. It's sitting at people's bedsides and listening to people and talking and driving to Exeter from Londonderry and all these different things. Not every part of ministry is exciting, but it's still important. So I want to ask you, what can you do today to make someone else's ministry more effective? And I'm not just talking about the pastor here. I want you to think more locally in your own life. Who do you see in your life or in the church that is doing something that you like, that you can get under and support? Maybe that's your spouse. And maybe your spouse is doing something that you can really come under and support and make their ministry more effective. Maybe it's someone at in the church or a coworker, or someone on the Little League team or wherever it may be. What can you do today to make someone else's ministry more effective? Because if you will work to make other people more effective in reaching people, then as a body, we will be more effective in reaching people. I've been reading a book on leadership written by two Navy SEALs. And the book talks about different principles based off of some of the war that they were in and some of the things that they learned. And one of the things that they talk about in this leadership book is called cover and move. Now, I have no military background, so I'm just going off of what they say here. But the basic idea is that when you're in battle, you don't just get up and move to another spot all as one team. What you do is part of you moves while the others get up and cover and sort of on the defense there. And then when they've moved to their spot, then they turn and cover while you all who were covering then go and move. And that's a good war strategy, so to speak. That's a good business strategy and leadership strategy, but that's a good strategy to reach the world with Jesus as well. So we as a church, just like in battle, we are outnumbered. Just like in battle, we are out of our turf, so to speak. But the only way that we will be effective is if we as a church, if we as Christians support one another in the efforts to reach other people. And so don't snipe at one another for minor, or as we talked about a number of weeks ago, for these tertiary or secondary things. Don't get involved in fights over those. Cover and move together as a church. Help each other out. So let's support each other for the greater good instead of just trying to do our own thing. And so to wrap us up today, I want to skip ahead to the final verses of chapter 16 just to remind you of why we are doing this. So these are the final two verses as Paul closes out the letter. And he says, according to the command of the eternal God to bring about the obedience of faith. In other words, to get people to put their faith in Jesus and follow Jesus. To the only wise God be glory forevermore, through Jesus Christ, amen. We're going to talk more about this next week, but I want you to remember why we are here. Why we're here. We're here to bring glory to God. And the best way that we do that is by sharing the glory of God with other people. And the more that people put their faith in God, the more that God will be glorified. And so that's why Paul had so many different people that he reached out to. Because he was ministering to them. They were an impact, directly or indirectly, of his ministry there. And so just like Paul, listen, let's stay focused. There's a lot of things out there that we could do, but let's stay focused on what we should do. Let's let that be the main focus of our life. So let's love God Let's love on people and share Jesus with them. I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we're going to go into a time of communion. If you did not grab a communion packet when I pray, if you're wanting to not get up after, you're welcome to get up and go grab one. But otherwise, we'll go into communion after that, and the communion packets are out in the lobby. Let's go ahead and spend a moment now praying.